Chapter 60. Apparition of the Great White Horse, rendered the more conspicuous by a stone statue of some rampacious animal with flowing mane and tail, distantly resembling an insane cart horse, which is elevated above the principal door. The Great White Horse is famous in the neighborhood, in the same degree as a prize ox, or a county paper chronicle turnip, or unwieldy pig for its enormous size. Never was such labyrinths of uncarpeted passages, such clusters of moldy, ill-lighted rooms, such huge numbers of small dens for eating or sleeping in, beneath any one roof, as are collected together between the four walls of the Great White Horse at Ipswich. It was at the door of this overgrown tavern that the London coach stopped, at the same hour every evening. And it was from this same London coach that Mr. Pickwick, Sam Weller, and Mr. Peter Magnus dismounted, on the particular evening to which this chapter of our history bears reference. "Do you stop here, sir?" inquired Mr. Peter Magnus, when the striped bag, and the red bag, and the brown paper parcel, and the leather hat box, had all been deposited in the passage. "Do you stop here, sir?" "I do," said Mr. Pickwick. "Dear me," said Mr. Magnus, "I never knew anything like these extraordinary coincidences. Why, I stop here too. I hope we dine together?" "With pleasure," replied Mr. Pickwick. "I am not quite certain whether I have any friends here or not, though. Is there any gentleman of the name of Tubman here, waiter?" A corpulent man, with a fortnight's napkin under his arm, and coeval stockings on his legs, slowly desisted from his occupation of staring down the street, on this question, being put to him by Mr. Pickwick, and, after minutely inspecting that gentleman's appearance, from the crown of his hat to the lowest button of his gaiters, replied emphatically, "No." "Nor any gentleman of the name of Snodgrass?" inquired Mr. Pickwick. "No." "Nor Winkle?" "No." "My friends have not arrived today, sir," said Mr. Pickwick. "We will dine alone, then. Show us a private room, waiter." On this request being preferred, the corpulent man condescended to order the boots, to bring in the gentleman's luggage, and preceding them down a long, dark passage, ushered them into a large, badly furnished apartment, with a dirty grate, in which a small fire was making a wretched attempt to be cheerful, but was fast sinking beneath the dispiriting influence of the place. After the lapse of an hour, a bit of fish and a steak was served up to the travelers, and when the dinner was cleared away, Mr. Pickwick and Mr. Peter Magnus drew their chairs up to the fire, and having ordered a bottle of the worst possible port wine, at the highest possible price, for the good of the house, drank brandy and water for their own. Mr. Peter Magnus was naturally of a very communicative disposition, and the brandy and water operated with wonderful effect in warming into life the deepest hidden secrets of his bosom. After sundry accounts of himself, his family, his connections, his friends, his jokes, his business, and his brothers, most talkative men have a great deal to say about their brothers, Mr. Peter Magnus took a view of Mr. Pickwick through his colored spectacles for several minutes, and then said, with an air of modesty, "And what do you think, Mr. Pickwick, I have come down here for?" "Upon my word," said Mr. Pickwick, "it is wholly impossible for me to guess. On business, perhaps." "Partly right, sir," replied Mr. Peter Magnus, "but partly wrong at the same time. Try again, Mr. Pickwick." "Really," said Mr. Pickwick, "I must throw myself on your mercy, to tell me or not, as you may think best, for I should never guess, if I were to try all night." "Why then, " said Mr. Peter Magnus, with a bashful titter. "What should you think, Mr. Pickwick, if I had come down here to make a proposal, sir, eh? He. " "That you are very likely to succeed," " replied Mr. Pickwick, with one of his beaming smiles. "Ah," " said Mr. Magnus. "But do you really think so, Mr. Pickwick? Do you, though?" " certainly, said Mr. Pickwick. "No, but you're joking, though." "I am not, indeed." "Why then, said Mr. Magnus, "to let you into a little secret, I think so too. I don't mind telling you, Mr. Pickwick, although I'm dreadful jealous by nature horrid, that the lady is in this house." Here Mr. Magnus took off his spectacles, on purpose to wink, and then put them on again. "That's what you were running out of the room for, before dinner then, so often," " said Mr. Pickwick archly. "Hush. Yes, you're right, that was it. Not such a fool as to see her, though. No. Wouldn't do, you know, after having just come off a journey. Wait till tomorrow, sir. Double the chance then. Mr. Pickwick, sir, there is a suit of clothes in that bag, and a hat in that box, which, I expect, in the effect they will produce, will be invaluable to me, sir." " said Mr. Pickwick. "Yes, you must have observed my anxiety about them today. I do not believe that such another suit of clothes, and such a hat, could be bought for money, Mr. Pickwick." Mr. Pickwick congratulated the fortunate owner of the irresistible garments on their acquisition, and Mr. Peter Magnus remained a few moments apparently absorbed in contemplation. "She's a fine creature," " said Mr. Magnus. "Is she?" " said Mr. Pickwick. "Very," " said Mr. Magnus. "Very. She lives about 20 miles from here, Mr. Pickwick. I heard she would be here tonight and all tomorrow forenoon, and came down to seize the opportunity. I think an inn is a good sort of a place to propose to a single woman in, Mr. Pickwick. She is more likely to feel the loneliness of her situation in traveling, perhaps, than she would be at home. What do you think, Mr. Pickwick?" "I think it is very probable," " replied that gentleman. "I beg your pardon, Mr. Pickwick," " said Mr. Peter Magnus, "but I am naturally rather curious. What may you have come down here for?" "On a far less pleasant errand, sir," " replied Mr. Pickwick, the color mounting to his face at the recollection. "I have come down here, sir, to expose the treachery and falsehood of an individual, upon whose truth and honor I placed implicit reliance." " said Mr. Peter Magnus, "that's very unpleasant. It is a lady, I presume? Eh? Ah. Sly, Mr. Pickwick, sly. Well, Mr. Pickwick, sir, I wouldn't probe your feelings for the world. Painful subjects, these, sir, very painful. Don't mind me, Mr. Pickwick, if you wish to give vent to your feelings. I know what it is to be jilted, sir. I have endured that sort of thing 3 or 4 times. I am much obliged to you for your condolence on what you presume to be my melancholy case," " said Mr. Pickwick, winding up his watch and laying it on the table. "But " said Mr. Peter Magnus, "not a word more. It's a painful subject." I see. What's the time, Mr. Pickwick?" " past 12. " dear me, it's time to go to bed. It will never do, sitting here. I shall be pale tomorrow, Mr. Pickwick." At the bare notion of such a calamity, Mr. Peter Magnus rang the bell for the chambermaid, and the striped bag, The red bag, the leather hat box, and the brown paper parcel, having been conveyed to his bedroom, he retired in company with a Japan candlestick to one side of the house, while Mr. Pickwick and another Japan candlestick were conducted through a multitude of tortuous windings to another. "This is your room, sir," apostrophe said the chambermaid. "Very well," apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick, looking round him. It was a tolerably large double-bedded room, with a fire. Upon the whole, a more comfortable-looking apartment than Mr. Pickwick's short experience of the accommodations of the Great White Horse had led him to expect. "Nobody sleeps in the other bed, of course," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "Oh, no, sir." Apostrophe, "very good. Tell my servant to bring me up some hot water at 8:30 in the morning, and that I shall not want him any more tonight." Apostrophe, "yes, sir," apostrophe, and bidding Mr. Pickwick good night, the chambermaid retired, and left him alone. Mr. Pickwick sat himself down in a chair before the fire, and fell into a train of rambling meditations. First he thought of his friends, and wondered when they would join him. Then his mind reverted to Mrs. Martha Bartle, and from that lady it wandered, by a natural process, to the dingy counting house of Dodson and Fogg. From Dodson and Fogg's it flew off at a tangent, to the very center of the history of the queer client, and then it came back to the Great White Horse at Ipswich, with sufficient clearness to convince Mr. Pickwick that he was falling asleep. So he roused himself, and began to undress, when he recollected he had left his watch on the table downstairs. Now this watch was a special favorite with Mr. Pickwick, having been carried about, beneath the shadow of his waistcoat, for a greater number of years than we feel called upon to state at present. The possibility of going to sleep, unless it were ticking gently beneath his pillow, or in the watch pocket over his head, had never entered Mr. Pickwick's brain. So as it was pretty late now, and he was unwilling to ring his bell at that hour of the night, he slipped on his coat, of which he had just divested himself, and taking the Japan candlestick in his hand, walked quietly downstairs. The more stairs Mr. Pickwick went down, the more stairs there seemed to be to descend, and again, when Mr. Pickwick got into some narrow passage, and began to congratulate himself on having gained the ground floor, did another flight of stairs appear before his astonished eyes. At last he reached a stone hall, which he remembered to have seen when he entered the house. Passage after passage did he explore, room after room did he peep into. At length, as he was on the point of giving up the search in despair, he opened the door of the identical room in which he had spent the evening, and beheld his missing property on the table. Mr. Pickwick seized the watch in triumph, and proceeded to retrace his steps to his bedchamber. If his progress downward had been attended with difficulties and uncertainty, his journey back was infinitely more perplexing. Rows of doors, garnished with boots of every shape, make, and size, branched off in every possible direction. A dozen times did he softly turn the handle of some bedroom door which resembled his own, when a gruff cry from within of "Who the devil's that?" Apostrophe apostrophe or "What do you want here?" Apostrophe apostrophe caused him to steal away, on tiptoe, with a perfectly marvelous celerity. He was reduced to the verge of despair, when an open door attracted his attention. He peeped in. Right at last. There were the two beds, whose situation he perfectly remembered, and the fire still burning. His candle, not a long one, when he first received it, had flickered away in the drafts of air through which he had passed, and sank into the socket as he closed the door after him. "No matter," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, "I can undress myself just as well by the light of the fire." Apostrophe, the bedsteads stood one on each side of the door, and on the inner side of each was a little path, terminating in a rush-bottom chair, just wide enough to admit of a person's getting into or out of bed, on that side, if he or she thought proper. Having carefully drawn the curtains of his bed on the outside, Mr. Pickwick sat down on the rush-bottomed chair, and leisurely divested himself of his shoes and gaiters. He then took off and folded up his coat, waistcoat, and neckcloth, and slowly drawing on his tasseled nightcap, secured it firmly on his head, by tying beneath his chin the strings which he always had attached to that article of dress. It was at this moment that the absurdity of his recent bewilderment struck upon his mind. Throwing himself back in the rush-bottom chair, Mr. Pickwick laughed to himself so heartily that it would have been quite delightful to any man of well-constituted mind to have watched the smiles that expanded his amiable features as they shone forth from beneath the nightcap. "It is the best idea," said Mr. Pickwick to himself, smiling till he almost cracked the nightcap strings. "It is the best idea, my losing myself in this place, and wandering about these staircases, that I ever heard of. Droll, droll, very droll." Here Mr. Pickwick smiled again, a broader smile than before, and was about to continue the process of undressing, in the best possible humor, when he was suddenly stopped by a most unexpected interruption. To wit, the entrance into the room of some person with a candle, who, after locking the door, advanced to the dressing table, and set down the light upon it. The smile that played on Mr. Pickwick's features was instantaneously lost in a look of the most unbounded and wonder-stricken surprise. The person, whoever it was, had come in so suddenly and with so little noise that Mr. Pickwick had had no time to call out or oppose their entrance. Who could it be? A robber? Some evil-minded person who had seen him come upstairs with a handsome watch in his hand, perhaps? What was he to do? The only way in which Mr. Pickwick could catch a glimpse of his mysterious visitor with the least danger of being seen himself was by creeping onto the bed and peeping out from between the curtains on the opposite side. To this maneuver he accordingly resorted, keeping the curtains carefully closed with his hand, so that nothing more of him could be seen than his face and nightcap, and putting on his spectacles, he mustered up courage and looked out. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.